Hello, and welcome to Talking Asset Management with KPMG. I'm Scott Woods, and I'll be your host today. This is our private credit fund series, and we are currently hosting several episodes focusing on private credit in our foreign jurisdictions. Today, I'm joined with two colleagues to discuss the U.K. and specifically what they are seeing with respect to private credit in and out and throughout the U.K. I'm pleased to welcome Simon Hart and Michael Boland. Simon is a U.K. tax partner and leads our private credit tax practice out of London. Mike is also a U.K. tax partner, but based in New York and leader of our U.K.-U.S. tax corridor, spending a lot of his time supporting U.S. clients on their international tax issues, including private credit. Welcome, guys.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, Scott. Really excited to talk to you.
Simon, let's start with the most recent guidance that has come out in the U.K. regarding LPs properly reporting income from funds as well as carried interest. Sounds like funds in the U.K. with U.K. investors as well as U.K.-based funds have a lot to consider.
Thanks, Scott. That's right. HMRC have come out with a new piece of guidance, which essentially talks about the information reporting that U.K. participants in funds and particularly carried interest holders require. In particular, HMRC have noted that it reduces the risk of a compliance check or an inquiry where a fund manager provides information to U.K. participants, including details of their carried interest and their co-investments within the funds. This document could be uploaded to the individual's tax return, or it could help the individual make white space disclosures within their tax return. This will help reduce compliance checks. HMRC, within their guidance, also note a response in relation to a common industry approach of using overseas information to support their UK tax return, for example, US K-1 reporting. HMRC notes that it wouldn't necessarily be reasonable care in the ordinary course to use K-1 information for a UK tax return, and they would expect UK carried interest participants and investors to ask for information specific to the UK in relation to computing their UK tax liability.
Yeah, and I think, Scott, just to add to what Simon's saying there, the interesting point for US managers with UK principals who are now affected by this updated guidance is there's the kind of qualitative aspect that Simon mentioned around the information packs that HMRC are suggesting they prepare that give more detail on the carry. So there's a kind of getting that bit right and to the degree that you want to manage the compliance checks or inquiries into the position. But then there's also the point around the qualitative aspects to it as around penalty and reasonable care. So HMRC say they can only charge penalties for errors in returns where an individual's failed to take reasonable care. But what this guidance clearly shows is that if an individual doesn't do anything with the foreign, let's say the US K-1 information they're given, that will put them in a more difficult position from a discussion perspective with the revenue if they look into the return. So it's going to be fact and circumstance specific and depending on the complexity of the affairs of the individual on a house-by-house basis. But we are expecting, as a consequence of this guidance, that US managers should expect the UK individuals to ask them for more information, whether that means full UK K-1 type reporting or UK amended information for them or something that's slightly less onerous than that. That's kind of case by case. But the general direction of travel is clearly towards more information and more focus on this area from the UK authorities.
Thanks for that update. So now let's talk specifically about the current and near future UK private credit markets. So Mike, we'll start with you and get right into it. What do you see from a UK credit market perspective as part of your role? And what are you seeing in terms of the outlook for 2025?
It's a busy time. I think that's the first and obvious thing to say, kind of getting lots of questions from US-based businesses about the UK credit market. It's an interesting time because in the UK, it's a large credit hub and market, right? So we've got the kind of trifecta of interest in UK assets, interest in UK investors and UK capital deployment. And then we've got a significant asset management and credit hub. So we've got a big asset management base and activity and participants in the market. And so those three things together create a kind of very conducive mix and environment to activity. And so we see lots of interest around fund structuring, deal work, recruiting investors and capital and everything in between. And it's great because in my role here based in New York, I get to work closely with Simon and his team and access it and help US investors and US clients from both sides of the pond. And yeah, it's a really interesting in time, frankly. Just to give a bit more color on kind of what's impacting that market, similar themes to what we're seeing in the other global markets, to be honest. So we're seeing growth in asset managements and also diversity of products being provided. The historically high interest rates are attracting investors to the market. And also you see alternative finance kind of crowding out the banks or taking some of the funding space that historically the banks were providing. So that's kind of on the supply side, I suppose. And then on the demand side, we're really seeing borrowers look at kind of alternative funding opportunities, bespoke opportunities, things that kind of really line up to their specific facts and circumstances. And then conversely, we also see kind of because the kind of expectations that the rate of interest may come down or interest rates may come down overall, some borrowers resisting refinancing as maturity walls roll up or trying to find different options. And so that all is conducive to kind of funding activity, but also a little bit of distressed activity and kind of restructuring as well. So yeah, lots going on. Probably just the last thing I'd mention, not specific to the credit market, but really important as well, is we've had a change of government recently in the UK. And whilst they're still focused very much on making a business environment conducive to investment in the UK, they are looking quite closely at some of the kind of more personal tax issues that can impact participants in this market. So they're making changes to the carried interest rules in the UK. They're also making changes to how non-UK resident individuals are taxed if they come to the UK. And so we see a lot of interest and activity and questions around those things as well, and making sure that we can help clients with those matters. So yeah, to summarize, lots and lots going on.
No, for sure. Sounds like it. All right, Simon, we'll turn it over to you. We'll talk a little bit about UK products and trends in structuring. So what's keeping you busy at the moment? And, you know, what are some of the structuring issues that they're seeing from a US outbound or maybe a UK inbound or throughbound perspective?
Yeah, thanks very much, Scott. And like Mike said, pleasure to be here. I think similar to Mike, we see the trifecta in the UK. So we're busy with investors. They're looking at new investments going into products with third party GPs. It's busy on the manager side. The fundraising continues. We're helping credit asset managers structure new funds for investors, including looking at the platforms. And of course, a lot of those UK funds are looking inbound into the US in terms of their investment activity. So that involves working closely with Mike and the team in New York around thinking about the structures that work best for inbound investment into the US. In the UK, maybe we'll come on to talk about it later, we have the qualifying asset holding company, a new holding company tax regime in the UK. We've been spending a lot of time exploring how that can be used as a platform for inbound investment into the US by UK and other European investors and fund structures. It's also busy on the investment side. Mike mentioned the assets. We've seen a number of bespoke transactions really covering the hybrid space between equity and credit investments. So transactions involving net fee related earnings. I'm sure you're seeing that in the US also, but also bespoke financing structures and arrangements for forward flow, you know, complex structures, difficult UK tax issues to get into. And then like Mike says, across the back, we've got these changes going on in relation to carried interest. So a lot to keep us busy at the moment.
Yeah. So you mentioned the qualified asset holding companies. Have those been successful, and does it work with private credit?
There's been a really positive uptake and use since this regime was introduced in 2022. For those listeners that aren't necessarily familiar, this was off the back of a government initiative to look at the use of UK platforms, UK holding structures. And really, the policy was aimed right across private markets, but with a specific eye on credit. And I mentioned its possible use as a platform for investment into the US, but also works very well for domestic and European strategies. A very flexible and easy to use tax regime, facilitating the use of different financing instruments, such as profit participating notes. Also, what I hear from my clients, what they really like about the qualifying asset holding company structure, and in particular institutional investors, is being able to plug into the substance, operations, people, and relationships that they have within the UK. So then we've seen a really encouraging uptake for a mix of all of those factors.
Good deal. All right, Mike, back to you. So some of our US clients have had to navigate through UK withholding taxes on their lending activities. So what's the state of play there?
Yeah, it's one of the main points we see coming up from a tax perspective and US clients asking about. So the UK withholds on payments of interest at 20% under UK domestic law. And so it's obviously, conceptually at least, a potential tax drag on deals and interest positions held in assets. There are many ways to manage withholding tax in the UK. So there are domestic law exemptions. So one that people may be familiar with is the quoted Eurobond or a listed instrument, which is often a way to manage withholding tax. There's also other ones, like there's something called the qualifying private placement regime, which is more recently enacted into domestic law that people look at. And again, it kind of comes down to facts and circumstances as to whether either of those are potentially available to you. Outside of domestic exemptions, we have a very strong treaty network from the UK and a particularly, quite an advantageous treaty with the US. And so we often see US participants with significant US investor base looking at treaty options. And again, there are ways to manage that either through a kind of standard treaty clearance regime or something called the DTTP, double taxation passport regime. And so again, we spend a lot of time making sure that the best structure is possible for the clients on a case by case basis. Sometimes that will be through a platform and making a treaty claim, or sometimes it will be through a kind of master feeder fund structure and looking to ensure that the right residency certificates and those kind of things are in place. So we can also help and often spend a lot of time managing this conversation and discussions with HMRC to ensure that the kind of the right documentation that provided up front and dealing with any correspondence or inquiry issues to manage that process as seamlessly as possible. So it's an area that we spend a lot of our time.
So you mentioned the passports, Mike. What are you seeing now in that?
I mean, in relation to the double taxation treaty passport regime, it is a hot topic and area of focus for credit participants, particularly US participants in the market. We know it's an area of focus. HMRC, the UK tax authorities, are getting better at kind of expediting and discussing these processes. I think there was probably some kind of pressures from COVID that we're now coming out of the back of. And so that's promising to kind of think through. Whenever we look at US structures and, you know, entities like LLCs add some complexity to investment structures from a UK withholding tax perspective. And so those kind of complexities can add to the uncertainty around this issue. The best thing we can advise clients to do is to make sure that the documentation supporting their DTTP position is as robust as possible. And we can certainly help clients with the kind of upfront elements of that and making sure that the package that is received by the UK tax authorities is supportive of the position being taken to help smooth the process and then deal with any kind of correspondence or questions that may arise. But it is an area of focus, certainly, and something we see a lot of work arising from.
Thanks. Appreciate the update. All right, Simon. So you mentioned earlier the carried interest. Obviously, that's a hot topic in a lot of different regimes. But what is the government looking for and the changes around carried interest grants to individuals in the UK, and how is that impacting the private credit managers?
And it's certainly a hot topic. We had a fiscal event, a budget event in the UK this autumn, and there was a lot of speculation in relation to potential changes to carried interest. We had a consultation run last summer with the government really coming in off the back of a manifesto that they were going to look at the carried interest tax rules. And a lot of this speculation was that carried interest tax was going to align with income tax rates, up to 47% in the UK. I think we got a good policy outcome. Now, the immediate change is that the rate of carried interest is going to go to 32% from next year. We're going to get some fundamental change coming from April 2026, which will have an impact on private credit managers. I think what's really positive about the discussion and a lot of thinking that we're doing around this policy change is that with some of the regime change that we might have, you know, there's some rules within the current framework that are really difficult for private credit managers to necessarily meet. So we have a rule which will become more widely applicable, that in order for something to be treated as carried interest, the underlying assets need to have a weighted average holding period of 40 months or more. And that can be difficult in a private credit context because of revolvers, other different and complex types of investments, such as loan to own restructuring and how that all operates within a credit fund structure. I think what's really promising is that the government, in their response and policy outcome, have called out private credit as a specific sector, an area where we might need specific rules, something that they will consult on. And I look forward to being part of those discussions and representing our industry.
Are there any other consequences from the UK transitioning from a capital gains-based to an income-based carried interest model?
Thanks, Scott. It's a great question because the move from a capital gains tax basis to an income tax basis does have many other possible repercussions for international fund manager groups. In particular, thinking about the territorial scope of the UK tax charge on carried interest. And in relation to that, short-term visitors to the UK, could they potentially be caught by the carried interest tax charge and the change to rules? Visitors that regularly visit the UK over a longer term basis, say for 1 to 2 days a week, down to those issues for longer term assignees that may spend an extended period in the UK. The rules will also be relevant for those individuals who have spent a number of years in the UK and then plan to relocate somewhere else. And yeah, the rules applicable to income mean that there's an expected change in this area from 2026 when we get the new regime.
There's definitely a lot of things to think about there. Thanks for that. So, Mike, Simon, any last minute thoughts, anything I missed that you want to bring up?
I think we're good. Pleasure to talk through. I think just the last reflection I have is just the breadth of everything that's going on from, we're seeing a lot in terms of asset-backed platforms, lending against real estate development projects to some of the more bespoke other structures that we've mentioned alongside kind of more routine leverage lending and the double tax treaty passport concerns that Mike had. So really varied and a lot going on in the alternative credit space in the UK.
I'd echo that. And I think the interesting thing is it's a great place to work. And although there are consistent themes, as Simon laid out, and we've talked about today, that are relevant to private credit, that the really interesting thing is almost on every deal, there's something of nuance or specificity for those clients that makes it really interesting to help on. And it's great to work in a kind of cross-jurisdictional environment like this. Great times and lots to look forward to in 2025, I'm sure.
Yeah, I totally agree. A lot to think about in private credit, which makes it a really fun area right now, and it's growing a lot. So this has been great. Both been giving us a lot to think about and consider. So thank you guys for joining. And thank you guys for listening. We want to hear from you. If you have any questions about this topic or anything else, reach out to me or Simon or Mike or any of your KPMG contacts, and we'll be happy to connect. Take care, everyone.